Welcome to In the Clear, Community Learning Exchange Advocacy Radio, with your hosts, Dr. John A. Oliver and Willie Anderson.
Hello, this is Willie Anderson, and this is a special edition of In the Clear, Community Learning Exchange Advocacy Radio. I am flying solo. My co-host, the good brother, Dr. Oliver, and I will have more dialogue, but I needed to share this information because of the pressing time factors of the 1 million moms off welfare, which will take place in Washington, D.C. later this month, August 28th. And again, we will have more dialogue on 1 million moms off welfare. In this segment, I spoke with Raquel Williams. She is one of the board members and coordinators, the force behind this movement. And as she says in our discussion, it is not just a program. It is not a program. It is a movement. It is a network. And you'll learn more about this network in our discussion. I met Ms. Williams at the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, that's NARO, 2015 summer conference, which was held right here in the state capital of Texas, Austin. And here is that conversation. Thank you for listening. Hello, this is Willie Anderson with In the Clear, and I'm here in Austin, Texas at the 2015 NARO Summer Conference, Building Communities, Inspiration and Innovation. And here I am sitting with Raquel Williams. Hi, Raquel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I really appreciate your being here and willing to share your story. So tell us what's going on.
So my name is Raquel Williams, and I am the motivating phenomenon behind the 1 million moms off welfare. And we are going to Washington, D.C. August 28th. Moms are across the United States are gathering to celebrate Dr. King and the March on Washington to bring attention to welfare moms and personal responsibility. So I have 10 years, and I don't want to say me personally, me and the team, we have 10 years to move a million moms off welfare.
So, again, it may seem facetious, but just what is welfare?
That's a good question. Everybody's on welfare. That's number one. So, if you look at the dictionary, welfare is defined as being any government assistance given to a person or family in need. So, if you look at financial aid would be considered a form of welfare. When you look at tax credits, that's a form of welfare. When you look at the big corporate bailout we gave corporations in 2007 or 2008, that was welfare. So any financial assistance that the government gives us, when we get our EIC at the end of the year, our earned income tax credit, that's welfare. Homeowners, they get tax credits. It's welfare. So the truth of it, the matter is everybody's on welfare. But welfare has been defined as this poor program or poor entitlement that's, you know, offered to poor families and preferably the stigma of black women, mm-hmm. young black women mm-hmm. in, you know, urban areas or even rural areas. So we're here to just dispel the myth altogether on what welfare really is. And how it should really be utilized.
Why have this million moms?
Why a million moms or why?
Why the program? Why have it? Why have the march?
Well, because first of all, myself, my story as a single mom, I was a struggling welfare mom of four. And I was stuck in what I call this merciless welfare system that penalized me for wanting to become independent. So literally, here I am working, trying to build my way out, trying to make my way out. And every time I got four steps forward, I was literally pushed 10 steps back. And people on welfare, or whether it's food stamps, Medicaid, Section 8, public housing, you know, people understand what we're talking about. If it's child care subsidies, soon as you obtain any type of employment, whether it's minimum wage, you, all of your food stamps and Medicaid, the things you really rely and depend on, they're reduced or cut drastically. And then you have to sit and say, well, it doesn't even pay to work. If I could get more money just by sitting home, I would prefer to do that. Because if I'm trying to work and trying to get out of this thing, you just totally, you know, take my subsidies away. And it just is, it makes the struggle harder. It doesn't motivate me to keep moving forward because now I'm struggling twice as hard. Mm-hmm. I'm working, I'm juggling school, I'm still a full-time mother. I'm the, you know, full-time student. And now I have to be constantly stressed on how I'm going to make ends meet because my subsidies were cut.
So you're feeling that even though you're trying to accomplish a goal to become more, as we would say, self-sufficient, you're getting penalized?
Absolutely. Yep. That's why that was one of the major motivations. And actually, I'm going to be honest with you. There was something very damaging. There's these effects or this experience that welfare left me. So it branded me that I had to, it took 15 years to heal from its emotional damage, its physical damage, its spiritual damage, intellectual, mental damage, because you're constantly thinking, I'm not good enough. I'm not adequate. I'm not significant. I'm not valued. I don't have nothing to contribute. I'm only, a mom that's good enough just for having kids. You're constantly fighting those stereotypes, those stigmas. You're constantly having to prove yourself and validate, and you just are not free. Free just to be and live. So what if I have a little bit of money? That should not depict who I am or who I'm going to be. And this situation really put me on my knees because I was on the verge of committing suicide and murdering my four sons. And it was right around the time Andrea Yates had murdered her sons in the tub. And I heard this voice. After I was just like looking at my life and I'm like, God, I'm working 40 hours, 40, 50 hours. I'm in school and I'm still broke. I'm struggling and I still am in lack and I'm still begging and borrowing all the time, asking people for help. Is this ever going to end? And, you know, the relationships with the children's fathers, that didn't help because they just go on about their business. So you left feeling rejected and abandoned and then struggle. And then you got social services telling you you $2 over the limit. You're talking about nervous breakdown. And I said, I don't want this life. Hell no. That's what I said. I said, I don't want this life. If this is the life that I got to live forever, I don't want it. I want out. And if I got to take my kids with me, that's what it's going to be. But God, that's the only thing I was going to say.
What stealed your hand?
What God? Because one of my sons, and I don't know which one it was, but they just burst out in this uncontrollable laughter. Literally, I ran the water to drown them. Like, I was planning on drowning my sons, and I was already planning on how I was going to kill myself. And one of them ran past me and just was laughing uncontrollably. And it was something about that laugh that was so pure and innocent that I had to find another way. And I remember dropping to my knees and I prayed and I asked God. And I said, Lord, if you get me out of this hellhole that I created in my right mind, I didn't ask for a car. I didn't want no job. I didn't want no money. I didn't ask for no husband. I didn't ask for nothing but peace of mind. I said, I promise I will come back and I will help the other moms come out of this place. And literally, I got up. I remember going to turn off my television. And then I remember immediately being and working a system. I created this system literally overnight where I would fold all the kids' clothes. I ironed them all. I fixed all the bottles. I made all the meals. I just went into a system mode. I was graced from that point forward to now to do what I do. Now, I didn't know that literally he would hold me accountable to that promise. But literally 15 years later, that is where we are. And that has been confirmed that he wants $1 million off of this dependency. Because it's one thing if you're just poor, you have... Because first of all, poverty has nothing to do with money. That's what I have to tell people. It's a mindset.
State of mind.
It is a mindset. But there's something that the struggle can create the mindset. Hmm. The struggle will force you like a mouse with force into a wall. It's like they do it in research trials. If you take opportunities from a mouse, if you corner a mouse into a wall, it will revert only to what it knows to do. So if a mouse is free to run through a maze as it wants to, but then you start to cut certain walls off, now the mouse can't run that way anymore. The more walls you cut, the more barriers, the more obstacles you place, you force the mouse to think small. You force them to think with a mindset of scarcity because what was freely and abundant is no longer available. So public policy and policymakers have been absolutely responsible for tearing and creating those obstacles. So when we go to D.C., We're asking President Obama to remove the obstacles. Everything we're asking for requires no appropriations. It requires no more money from Congress. We're like, listen, you did it. You did enough. We want to take our destinies into our own hands, because obviously nobody else really cares enough. And it's very clear.
So let's go back to this state of mind and the idea of money. Mm-hmm. Because let's be real, money is a tool.
It is. It is.
And we talk about systemic. You used the word system earlier about the process that you had in place. So you use system in that way in a positive manner. The systemic, the historical facts, poverty. Mm-hmm. Money is a factor in some capacity. How would you address that? You've already said some things, but right. What would you say to...
Well, I would say that you can give... Okay, so here's the difference between a poor mindset and a wealthy mindset. Mm-hmm. A poor mindset will wait on the opportunities to come to them. They will wait for someone else to do something for them. They will just wait. They don't critically think. They don't move beyond what they see. They don't ask the right questions. Everything that you say, it is so. That is a poor mindset. They don't have initiative. A poor mindset lacks initiative. It lacks the ability to create, to be innovative, because it is complacent. It is comfortable with what it is. It sees nothing wrong with where it is. Whereas a wealth mindset always looks for opportunity, always looks for the open door, always is looking to create, not just for themselves, but for someone else. That is the difference. A poor mindset is about me. A wealth mindset is, how can I help someone else, even when I don't have everything that one might think? So it's just a different, it's a different approach.
So what I'm hearing, it's not just about this Million Moms Off Welfare March. There's something that happened prior.
Absolutely.
And that will happen after.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So it's 10 years. We got 10 years. When we go to D.C. on the 28th, it's just telling policymakers, hey, we're here. This is our agenda. And if anybody is putting their name in the hat for this 2016 election, if you don't pick up this agenda, you are not serious about serving America's people, because we represent the most lowliest. We are the lowliest people. And if you look at the hierarchy or the food chain, or, you know, your mm-hmm. economic chain, mm-hmm. we represent the lowest. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have this agenda as one of your top agendas, then you're not trying to serve American people.
So what are the, if you had to say 2 to 3 major points you would want to leave with the president and policymakers?
Absolutely. So we have our legislative agenda. Our number one point that we have is freeze mom's benefits for 3 years while she finds, seeks, and maintains employment. Now, these are moms that are enrolled in our initiative. That's number one. We want mom's benefits frozen, because as soon as she works, she restarts getting all these reductions and decreases and consequences. If you allow her benefits to stay the same while she's employed, now she has resources. She has money. She has discretionary income. Now she can plan on saving. Because she's a part of our network, we teach on goal setting and financial literacy and, you know, purpose. And don't just trick your money. The money is not there to trick. So we're already working to reverse the mindset of poverty while she's earning and, you know, increasing and feeling good about, hey, I got a little bit of money in the bank. You know, what do I do with it? Well, you have a plan for your money. Nobody wants to plan a future when they can't even plan what meal they're going to eat or how they're going to get to work the next day. You don't plan a future when you are working beyond scarce resources. The second point is educate non-incarcerated fathers for failure to pay child support. We understand that you cannot move a million moms off welfare without dealing with the fathers. And we understand through our research that the number one predictor of welfare dependency was the amount of child support a mom received. So we say, guess what? Don't incarcerate our fathers for failure to pay child support. Their situation is probably just as worse as ours. So putting them in jail for being poor and uneducated is not the answer. They need training. They need resources. They need fatherhood parenting courses. They need leadership development. They need resources and support too. And we want to make sure that our fathers are getting those kind of support. The third thing is placing Section 3 on the housing authority's performance scores. Every year, housing authorities goes through what they call the performance assessment scoring.
Okay.
And what we want to see is Section 3 actually have a compliance score set at no less than 25. So we know that, number one, you can live in public housing, and every year they send audits out, they send consultants out to measure whether or not there's, lights touching the building or trees touching the building. Right. And you can get points taken off of your scores if trees and stuff touch the building. But if your whole population is unemployed and depressed and addicted to some drugs and kids is in gangs and, you know, teenagers are pregnant, there is nothing to measure that. So we're saying not only do we want resident satisfaction placed on the performance score, which it used to be back in the day, but we want Section 3 to be placed on the performance scores of housing authorities as well. And those are our top three acts. And that requires nothing. That's just enforcement. That's a policy. That's a systems change. That does not require Congress to have to go and appropriate more money in the annual budget.
I'm going to go back to basically what you're doing on your local level.
Mm-hmm.
And you are from?
North Carolina, Raleigh.
Raleigh.
Yes.
And your program is considered a nonprofit?
We are a nonprofit. Can I Live is a 501c3. We're a resident-driven nonprofit. We're the only national public policy and advocacy organization whose board of directors are residents of public housing. So we are the moms and dads. We are the people.
About how many do you have in there?
On our board?
Sure.
We represent about 12 different states at presently. So we're working on, you know, we have our national unit, then we have our state chapters. And totally, we, you know, the whole entire organization represents close to, I would say, 400 residents throughout the United States.
So what do you need from the community?
Well, number one, I need the community to be aware. Number one, know that the Million Moms launches in D.C., okay, so tune in socially, tune in online, make sure you are there, whether you're going to stream live with us or you're going to be present. And then get hooked up to the network. You know, the 1 Million Moms of Welfare, it's not a program, it's a strategy and it's a network.
Got it.
Now, you do have to pay to have access to the network, and we strategically did that way, so to have access to this network. Because we believe if you're not willing to invest into yourself, you are not going to move off welfare. And if you can't access an online platform, you cannot move off welfare, because we are in a 21st century technology society. So we put those two parameters up there specifically for people who, anybody that comes on, they actually want to do something, or else they would have never even made those first steps.
And where can this information be accessed?
So we have a website, www.1mmow.org. And then we have canilive.org. So the website is number one, mmow.org, for more information. Or go to Facebook, and our handle is 1MMOW, Twitter, 1MMOW. You can find us just by looking at 1 Million Moms of Welfare. You can Google that, and you'll find us.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, you're in the clear.
Thank you. I like it.
Thank you once again for joining me here on In the Clear Community Learning Exchange Advocacy Radio. We invite you to follow us on Twitter at In the Clear. That's our handle. And also, you can like us on Facebook, In the Clear. And as another option, you can also find us on intheclear.podbean.com. On behalf of the good brother, Dr. John A. Oliver, I'm Willie Anderson. And we'll be talking with you very soon. And please, please stay in the clear.